as Don mentioned, my background is really in winemaking. I'm a farmer as well, and been involved in the business world and the wine industry for some time. I am proud of the fact that I'm a fourth generation winemaker, but more proud of the fact that my fifth generation kids, both boys and girls, have decided to get involved in the business from either the farming side or the business side. So it's really great to have your kids as partners. It's really fantastic for me. And my youngest one that I mentioned is, his name is Sasakaya. Anybody know Sasakaya? Somebody's got to know Sasakaya, no. Well, it's the name of a little winery in Tuscany. And so when she arrived, she came a little early. She was born about 3 weeks earlier than what we planned. And so I quickly called up one of my sons and I said, you've got to go down and buy a bottle of Sasakaya. He did, and he arrived at the hospital about 5 minutes after she did. And I opened the wine and poured a little glass and put my finger in it and put a little drop on her tongue. And I would do that every night before she went to bed. And I can tell you, by the time she was 3 years old, she could blind taste wines with some of the best winemakers in California. So now I don't share that story with everybody. With my Italian roots and even Irish roots and deep winemaking and single. So I share that with you about my kids because our lives tend to revolve around our children. And I'm particularly concerned about what's happening in the world today from the standpoint of the depletion of natural resources. And for me, I think that the conversation around biodynamics is not only a conversation about farming, but it's a conversation about what the possibility of agriculture could be. And I believe it's also by engaging in the conversation of biodynamics, we're expanding our consciousness, I would suggest. And I believe what's hopeful, actually a friend of mine in the room here, Barney, and I were talking about this yesterday, I think what's so hopeful for me, and at times I become so depressed about the numbers and the facts and the statistics about the decline in the natural resources. And if you project it out going forward, it's really kind of a scary dynamic. But what is, and I'm going to just have to show you this book, and some of you probably already read it, but this is Brian Schwimm's new book, and it is amazing. It's the journey of the universe, and he talks about time in a very different perspective than the way we live in time. And he talks about why that is, and how we become so disconnected with the world around us. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I just want to recommend this book to you, because for anybody that's involved in what Rudolf Steiner had offered us and shared with us, this puts it in an amazing context. And I might have to refer to it a little bit as I talk about some of these things. And another book that I like is The Biodynamic Farm. It's a very, very simple book, but it's the best little introduction to a biodynamic farm. I never ever recommend agriculture to anybody to pick up the agriculture book to try to read it. You need a village to read the book. those are my introductory remarks. So I'll kind of launch into biodynamics. As of course we know that it all started with Rudolf Steiner when he gave a series of lectures in the early 1920s, in 1924, and he was a beg. I think the term might be appropriate. There was a group of farmers in Begden, and they had been for a number of periods of time, and that they were so anxious to hear about farming from his perspective, from his larger worldview perspective. And so finally, he had agreed to give a series of lectures. And he did this over a 1 week period of time and gave 8 lectures. I think the thing that's just amazes me is not only did he spend 2 hours each day lecturing on biodynamics, but he spent about an additional four hours speaking about other topics. So Steiner was, as we know, was a polymath. He was one of those people that knew a lot about a number of different subjects and a number of different topics. I believe what also drew him to decide to talk about farming and agriculture in a particular way, and he decided that he was going to speak about it from the standpoint of giving practical applications to bring the life, the way I would say it, is to bring the life energy back into the soil, because these farmers who are asking to help them out were experiencing decline in their crops and decline in the productivity of their animals.
Oh, excuse me, I'm having a hard time hearing you. The rooms are heating up here. Would you like to use my
Is that better? Is that helpful? Okay. And not only, so Steiner was in, felt compelled to speak not only to help these farmers with the productivity of their farms, but he also felt very strongly that what was important at that time was to enliven the food. He felt that he was experiencing a decline in nutrition in food, and he felt that what was missing in, I'm going to call it, in society, in our culture, in our world, was the nutrition in the food that would provide us our ability to be able to expand our thinking. Because as humans, we have a different responsibility on the planet. We're not just creatures on the planet, we have the possibility of being creators on the planet. And so without good nutrition, good nutritious food, we're missing the opportunity to be able to contribute. And we know that Steiner's whole orientation to life was about contribution. The additional thing that I think that Steiner was aware of is that you and I and our parents and our parents' 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 parents grew up in a world that approaches the world from the standpoint of what I call sort of a reductive view of the world. That is, we like to break things down into individual units, oftentimes try to fix them and stick them back into the system. But Steiner didn't see the world that way. He saw that the world is the individual components had their very existence by virtue of the fact that they were connected with the system. So it was inappropriate to pull them out of the system. You know, when we look back in the period of time during the Renaissance period, that was a period of time where we were informed by art and religion, philosophy, and science. Of course, when Newton came along, things started to shift, and we started to become more enamored with the information that we were getting from science and science alone. And that caused us to start to look at the world differently and analyze the world differently and evaluate the world differently. You know, the way I often describe it is not so much from the, you know, in farming, when there's a problem, we run to the chemical shed and we get this chemical or that chemical to deal with this insect or that insect or this nutritional problem. In medicine, you go to the doctor and problem, we have high cholesterol, we get a pill, we have diabetes, we get a pill, we get high blood pressure, we get a pill. And that's very seldom that we run into a doctor that's willing to give us time to evaluate our system, this system. I'm in dialogue with my doctor right now because I have high cholesterol and I am unwilling and not interested in taking the statin. And so I'm trying to evaluate other ways that I can engage in my life from a number of different avenues. One is to avoid that, but ultimately I may have to. I don't know at this stage of the game, but we'll see. But I felt it was my responsibility to at least look at it differently. So Steiner saw this world differently, he engaged with the world differently, and he communicated it from a point of view that was really quite different. Steiner operated from a different worldview, and he operated and he spoke consistent with that different worldview. So what I thought we would do is we would talk a little bit about that worldview. And it's all in relationship to the plan. So when he looked at the plant, he looked at it from the standpoint, or he shared with us from the standpoint that what the opportunity was for us was to create balance in polarities. balance in the cosmic polarity and balance with the earthly polarity. And so the way we orient our activities on the farm is from that standpoint. We look at the plant from that particular perspective, we look at the farm from that particular perspective, and we organize the types of materials that we would use, the types of, whether it's the activities or whether it's the preparations, the amount of the preparations or the types of preparations that we would use. Now he had, when he gave his lectures, he organized them around three different general categories. One was how we are connected with the larger world around us. The other one is the possibilities of the farm as an organism. And then the third one was the use of the preparations. So I thought we'd talk about a couple of these. So I'm kind of excited about this part because I find that every time I give this lecture, particularly, at least every time I talk about biodynamics, I usually get something new for myself. So I'm kind of counting on you to help me out with this. So this is where we all work together. Steiner saw that we were connected to the larger universe, and that's where this really is. This book of Brian Swims is really fantastic. What I really didn't know before, or really be able to appreciate before, that this universe that we're in has trillions of stars. Now, we hear that one all the time. But what I'd never heard before was billions of galaxies. Billions of galaxies. That was, that changed everything for me. It just was phenomenal to realize. And then he talks about how when the Big Bang occurred, there was this outward momentum. And it continues. And it's continuing to move outward. But there's a counterforce. And the counterforce is gravity, which kind of holds it together. And then there's this pulsating dynamic that exists. There's a pulsating dynamic that exists in the stars. There's a pulsating dynamic that exists inside of the solar system. There's a pulsating dynamic that exists inside of our Earth. When we think about it, each day is a breathing out in the morning and a breathing in at night. And so those are dynamics in which we don't often think about. We have a particular orientation to the world that we live in. And we have a particular orientation to the plants as how they grow. So before we get into the larger system, what I want to talk about is that tree out there. Which one can you see? Either one of those eucalyptus trees. You know, the normal orientation that we have to a tree is that it grows in a particular way. That is that it receives its nutrient and its moisture from the rain and from the water. So when it rains, it lands on the soil, and the soil, the moisture transmits nutrients and elements up through the roots, and the energy comes up this way. And that's how we see it. And it moves up into the trunk. This is a grapevine, by the way. And it moves up into the trunk and out into the branches, which we call spurs, and eventually out into the canes. And that's how it gets developed. But the reality is that there's just as much impact from this space out here as there is from this space here, that is beneath, from the earth up. And yet our orientation and our thinking and our practices and our activities are normally from this direction. So the challenge that we have is to shift our orientation and start to recognize that there is an impact from the outside. And this Steiner referred to as rhythms. And these rhythms impact the vine on a daily basis. You know, May 20th this year was different than May 20th last year. May 20th in the morning was different than May 20th this year than last year. And my vines in my vineyard this year on May 20th were this long. And the year before on May 20th, they were this long. So in spite of the fact that the plant has an archetype and it has an expression that we can identify what it is by looking at it, it's different from year to year. And that's because of the activities here as well as the activities here. The
The indigenous people have a special word, and some of you in this room probably know Pachamama. Anybody know Pachamama? So we probably know the organization Pachamama, right? Lynn Twist, and she's impacted probably half the room here. But the indigenous people use this word, we would say Mother Earth. Pachamama means Mother Earth. But the indigenous people would say, for them it means the earth, all time, and all universe. So they're connected to the world in which they live in from a very different perspective. They're connected to the continuum of time in their past and how it translated and how it was transferred to them to today. And they're connected with it in the future. They know that what they're going to be doing today is going to have an impact in the future. And so they're cognizant of their activities today relative to the impact that it's going to have or how they're going to impact it. So they recognize that they're part of a larger system and they're not disconnected and they're not isolated and they're not alone and they're not separate. And so they operate as if they're part of the system, not outside of the system looking in or creating activities outside of the system that have an impact. So, help me out here. So what are some of these, well, let me just say one more thing. So we're part of this universe as well. And I described that a little bit from Brian Schwimm's perspective, is that there's this pulsating dynamic and that we're connected and that we are, our very existence arises as a result of the fact that there is this system and the system went through this evolution. And the evolution is continuing. So we are part of the evolution. But the evolution is in a very unique place now. That is that what he suggests is it's now, there's a huge impact as a result of human consciousness. Or lack thereof of consciousness. But if we could be present to the conscious, we could expand the possibility of our awareness, then there's a possibility of us acting differently or maybe even more consistent with the impact that we have or don't have. I feel like I'm kind of double talking there. So that's the larger system. And within that there's what we would call rhythms, and there's energy. So what is some of this? So here's where you participate. So what are some of those energies that occur in the space around us, in the cosmos in which we live in, that we don't think too much about, that not only have an impact on us, although Steiner would say that we've emancipated ourselves from our environment. We're inside here, right? Because it's a little cold outside, so we came inside. But the plant's still outside there. That tree's still out there. And it's still being impacted. So what's impacting this plant?
The plants. I would say plants.
You say planets?
Plants.
Yeah, very good. In which way?
Frequency of energy that comes from different Mars, Jupiter, Sun, Saturn.
Okay, the Sun, Saturn, other planets. Okay. What else?
Wind.
Say again?
The moon.
The moon. Yeah. So moonlight impacts. What else? Yeah, so the heat from the sun.
And then when the earth gives the heat back after during the night.
Yeah, so the rising heat. So there's an upward rising of heat, there's an upward movement on the planet. What else?
Water.
Yeah, rain.
Meteors.
What else?
Wind.
Again?
Wind.
Yeah, there's this huge jet stream that exists around us, right? What else?
Fault lines, earth tremors.
Yeah, down here, so. What was it you said? Earth tremors, what was the first thing?
Fault lines,
yes.
fault lines.
Water also. Below.
Water here.
Water. Air quality or lack thereof.
You mean like pollution?
We'll just call it.
How about greenhouse gases?
Elementals.
Yeah. I don't hear that one happen. So they're all over, right?
Wildlife and birds. They're underneath
the road. Wildlife.
Oh, we got to go back to elemental for just one That's a very different answer to this set here. What do you mean by elementals?
Like nature spirits. Gnomes and sylphs and undines.
The nature's spirit, right? This is a Steiner meeting, so we would use the word spiritual in some context as an energy or a force.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what I first thought about was the human being, right? That also came here, helped carry maybe in terms of the way the relationship between humans and the plants, too, especially in agriculture.
So, in addition to something like a gnome or a sylph, there may be a human, and that may have a different spirit or energy, and that may be on that map.
It is already in the trimming of the old plant or the new plant.
Yes, or the trimming of the yes, right. Human is involved in by virtue of the fact that he prunes, or she prunes, right.
Electromagnetic.
How
about insects, bees, pollinators?
Soil.
So the life in the soil, huh? Is that what you meant by that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was thinking first of mycelium, but then, you know, all the biological organisms and all the nutrients and composition and aeratedness and water running through it, all of that.
Great.
The balance of light and dark.
Light and dark. Say again. Rays of light and
time.
We have light. The light can come from lots of different sources.
Yeah, different rays.
Yeah. And time. This is the fullest this page has ever been for me.
Also, the proximity to other life, essentially, its connectedness to another ecosystem. Or how it's been divided.
Proximity to other life.
The ecosystem.
Earthworms.
Yeah. Cows and horses.
Cows and horses. Okay. So we can go on and on and on. I can see there's no end to this one. There's a couple that we want. Photosynthesis, of course. We'll put that in there. And then gravity. You know, those are some of the big ones. And then there's radiation and there's electricity in the air. So lots and lots and lots of different energies that exist inside of the space that we're in. And then you guys went into the spirit world, which is fantastic. The elementals, I think that's just fantastic. And even the human consciousness is another one that we sort of talked about briefly. So these are all things that very, very seldom get included in the conversation when we think about farming. Then there's the other ones, rhythms. So we spoke more of the energies that exist in the space in which we go. So what are some of the rhythms that we experience on a day-to-day basis, or a weekly, or monthly, or annual basis, or even longer?
Tides.
Seasons,
yeah.
And the period just is long day, short day, etc. As it goes from the beginning.
The diurnal of the, is that what you mean?
Equinoxes. Solar and lunar cycles.
Say again?
Solar and lunar cycles.
Okay.
there's just something missing without the demon. There's two shoots to each spur, and on each shoot there's two clusters, and that's how you know. Okay. What else?
That's a good too. Periodicity of how that all works for the common cell.
Okay, can you say that one more time?
The periodicity.
Periodicity, I don't know the word.
It's probably the way the rhythms interact with each other. They have long periods, short periods, and they all have a relationship with each other. It's the periodicity.
So the relationship of all of these with each other.
Yeah.
And many more of these.
Yeah.
Very good, thank you. About
breathing.
You say?
Breathing.
Breathing. And I was thinking of the different, what type of breathing were you thinking of? I was thinking
of. Well, human or respiration, right? Plant respiration.
Yeah, plant, very good. And all animal, all breathing. And then there's the breathing I'm going to suggest to the planet. I think I sort of mentioned earlier, breathing in at night and out in the day. Then there's the breathing of the solar system and the breathing of the galaxy and of the universe itself and each of the stars. Lots and lots of breathing. Lots and lots of pulsations. What other rhythms is the plant connected with? Yes?
Life and death.
Life and death. What are some of the different moon cycles?
New moon, full moon.
New moon, full moon. So we know about every waxing, waning, wax on, wane off. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you one little tip because I learned this when my daughter was in fifth grade, and I found it. It's a very cool tip. So this is how we know whether we're waxing or waning, whether we're moving to a new moon or a full moon. So when you look up in the sky and you see the moon looks like that versus like that. Okay. So this is the letter
D.
D. And D stands for dog. And this is the letter
C.
Stands for cat. So dogs come to us as the moon gets full and cats go away. Believe me, when you look at the moon next time, you will see it and you will never forget. So, the combination of, there's a reality that we could have as farmers, that there's these activities in which the plant resides in that will have an impact on the plant. And there's a possibility we could look from that standpoint. What I suggest, one of the things that Steiner gave us also is what we call the possibility of art in farming. That is that the farmer can notice, can be conscious of these activities and be conscious of the impact that these have on the plant. I say that that farmers have the opportunity to listen to what the property needs, to listen to what's missing, to listen to what the property wants to express. Steiner referred to the property as having an ego. I thought that was ours to have alone, but I guess we could share that with the property. That it has an attitude, that it has something, that has a personality, we might say, has something it wants to express, but the way it's going to express it, we have to participate. We have to be part of that expression. We have to be looking for that and adding what's missing. So that the adding what's missing could be some animals. The adding what's missing could be a little shed for the animals for shade. It could be a plant in this particular area, or it could be an orchard on this hillside, or it could be a small pond over in this part of the property. Steiner also saw the property like a living organism. Not that it is a living organism, but like a living organism, like the possibility that it had the elements of a system, any more than our body has the elements of a system, such that they could interact with each other. And so the opportunity we have as farmers is to look for that systematic way in which the property works together, supports itself. In the way we can look at it, how do we add those things? So we can say that a farm has a circulatory system. So that the rain falls, we can look at here, so that the rain falls on the property in a certain way, that it's going to have a flow, a pattern of movement. So that pattern of movement can inform us as to where we can collect water for the following year, where there's going to be different water patterns in the soil, where the water is going to collect. We also know that there's a circulation in the water as it moves through the soil. Some soils have much more granular in nature. Some have much more clay. So in some cases, the water falls through it right away. I'm blessed with a soil that just receives the water. It has small fines or even some large rocks. It goes into the soil and then it gets collected by the clay. So it has this great water holding capacity. So those are the things that we can observe in the circulatory system of the farm. The farm also can have a respiratory system. That is the movement of air. So it has a particular flow. The airflow here is going to be very different when it's blowing up this way versus when it's coming down this way, because those trees will block it or change the airflow pattern. And those are things we can take into consideration. Steiner also said that the farm had a digestive system. In the case of the farm, we look at animals as being the digestive system. We have the ruminants, whether it's cows or sheep, goats, move through the farm and digest the food and then turn it into nitrogen, potassium, and phosphate and put that back into the soil. So they're digesting. There's also a sanitation system, if you will. The pigs, you know, they eat all the waste. They're fantastic. And then, of course, the nervous system. The farmer. The farmer having the opportunity to notice what's next and what's missing and what to include. So these are two of the main themes that Steiner took on in the discussion of the agriculture book. That is that we're part of a much larger system, and that system has an impact on the planet, and there's an opportunity for us to observe that. And then the other one is that the farm is the possibility as an organism. I thought I'd just take let me see if there's some questions, because I'm just kind of rolling here. Yes?
My question was about that last part that you mentioned about the nervous system being the farmer. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit more about that? Because it seems like the nervous system would be kind of a more complex portion of the farm.
Well, that's great. So what do you see there?
I see the farmer being kind of the vessel of the nervous system.
Well, right. So I think I can see that. Where I was looking from was that for the farm to be a farm, it takes a human. Because a farm's not natural. A farm is outside of nature. That's, we would maybe say that's more natural there.
So the laboring system is the nervous system.
Say again.
The laboring system is the nervous system.
I think it's the process by which we look at how the farm could actually be the possibility of an organism. So that is where the human, because it's not an organism, so it's not an organism of itself. So what he was sharing with us is the possibility that we can organize the farm like it's an organism. So we can organize elements on the farm so that they have the ability to interact. In nature, they will do that on their own. But in a farm, it's an artificial environment that we've created for it. And that's the place I was
going. So the farmer has the ability to manipulate it, hence kind of govern the nervous system.
Right.
Well, what about something like the insects, though, which hold this enormous intelligence that we can harness in one way, that how we farm brings insects in and directs them or eliminates them because of how we farm?
Right.
Is that... would that be part of the nervous system?
I think yes. Yes, I would be hard-pressed to say no. So what I mean by that is that in nature there is an intelligence that exists in nature. There's an intelligence that's existed on the planet through its development all through this period of time. What we want to do, I believe, is take that into consideration and respect that, and respect that exists. And then our role is to recognize that the health of the system is probably the most important piece. Let me put it in a little different context. So the way I tend to describe farming is that all farming is exploitive. It's exploitive in the sense that we're taking nutrients and elements from the soil every time we farm. And we remove it, taking it away from the property. And we have the opportunity to replace that nutrient. In conventional farming, we use petrochemicals. We use salts, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphate. In an organic farm, we use natural materials. We build compost. We build free-range animals throughout the grass and turn it into the nitrogen, the potassium, and the phosphate. We'll plant cover crops and extract nitrogen into the legumes, and then thereby puts nitrogen into the soil. But the orientation in the organic farm is about natural materials, replacing natural materials. And there's also an orientation to bringing health into the environment, to trusting in the diversity of the environment. And then the third piece of this is, in biodynamics, we say that there's also a life energy that's building in the soil. So the opportunity in biodynamics is to put that life energy back into the soil. That's actually suggesting that there's something beyond nature. Steiner's suggesting preparations. So I like to think that in organic and biodynamic farming, what we're doing is we're actually trusting in the health and the diversity of the property. So I often describe this raising a biodynamic vine or organic vine is like raising a child. In the sense that as parents, we can't manipulate our kids, in spite of the fact that we try it really, really hard. But what we can do is we can create a healthy environment for them. So that is, we can feed them well, we can feed them organic, we can give them the opportunity to go to good schools, live in good neighborhoods, participate in arts and sports and whatever it is that they choose to take on. But at the end of the day, our greatest hope is that they will fully express themselves. It's the same thing with the vine. That what we can do is we can contribute to the health and the diversity and the viability and the life energy within the farm. And then sit back and trust that that's going to take care of the farm, that's going to take care of the planet. A conventional farmer focuses on the plant and sort of the rest of the area be damned, so to speak. So they bring food and water to the plant. Here in organic and biodynamics, what we're doing is we're bringing the food and the water and the life energy into the space in which the plant grows, trusting that the plant is going to reach out and get what it needs. Okay, so this sort of ends my thoughts there. I want to see if you have some questions. Yes.
I was wondering what you may have realized about your vineyards and your farm.
Well, so many things. So many things. As I was describing these things, I really was describing it from the standpoint of my farm. And it's one particular farm. And it's our family farm that we've had now for about 15 years. And as time has gone on, and as we become develop a stronger relationship with the space in which the farm resides, and then expanding our awareness of the interactions with the different dynamics of the farm itself and the plants that exist there, and we then make choices to add or detract from the farm. So maybe I'll just describe it. So it's 160 acres that has woodlands all around, and it's a hillside farm. So the elevation changes about 700 foot from the bottom of the farm to the top of the farm. there's a woodland area that surrounds about 3.5 the size of the farm. There's a pond in the middle of the farm. There's 70 acres of vineyards on 160. The balance of it is either woodlands or pastures that we've developed. So we've crossed fence and added animals. We brought in sheep and goats and cows, and we have these portable chicken coops. We have two portable chicken coops with about 50 or 60 chickens that go in at night, and then the chicken coops are pulled out into a different part of the vineyard wherever the fellows are working that day, and they hop out. Of course, they work and fertilize and so on and so forth. And then we've also cross-fenced the vineyard itself so we can put animals into the vineyard at different times of the year. Because we find that their presence is really very important for us. Not only is it the presence of their life energy, but also the fact that they digest the soil, the grass, and then turn that into the nitrogen with potassium and phosphate. We get nitrogen from the legumes that we plant. We also have a large compost pile that we develop each year that comes from when we press the grapes. Okay, when we press the grapes at the winery, we bring the pressings back and we add in animal. We had a cow, and we mix that along with straw, and we compost that throughout the year. And then we spread that onto the vineyard right after harvest, and that's followed by cover crop seeds. And so we have a mixture of cover crop seeds that we have found that provides a number of different benefits. And then those seeds grow until they get to about 50 or 60 centimeters high. And then they act as an attractant, if you will, to beneficial insects. And so the beneficial insects balance out the problem insects. So we have problem insects. We just don't have them in populations that they actually start to overrun the problem. Because eventually a predator will start to show up, hopefully. But it's happened pretty much every time. I've converted about 3,000 acres this way, so it's it happens every time. Yes?
You've also, in the last few years, experimented with, in addition to things like cows and chickens, you brought groups of human beings onto this piece of property and had conversations like this on a regular, structured basis. And you've been doing that with people that work there and people that come in from far flung. Have you noticed anything by the presence of the human part of this?
Well, what I have noticed is
really, there a role for human beings in biodynamics?
Well, I do. What I have seen is biodynamics impact the human being.
That impact you can see is that the human beings that are brought there leave having been impacted.
Yes.
How about the other way around?
So we have this camp, of course. We have this camp. I do about 25 camps a year. 2 minutes left. 25 camps a year, and I bring about 7 or 8 people at a time. Now, the people are distributor sales folks, the people that sell our wines around the country. And without exception, and I'm going to say all 200 of them that have come through the camp, they, to the last one, send me a note afterwards, and they say, this has been the most life-altering experience I've ever had. To actually be in the space, not only the space that exists there, but to be able to actually see it, not just look at it, but actually see it, for them to actually see the relationship of these different life forms for the first time ever, for them to experience a farm that way. It changes their whole orientation to the work that they do, the product that they sell out in the marketplace. It's brand new for them. She says, I've changed my diet, I've lost 30 pounds, I love my job. I love those notes a year later. But the other thing that was really opened up for me, and I'll just wrap it up with this, is that this concept of that the nutrition that we take in has the possibility of enlivening our thinking really hit home for me when we discovered a young fellow who's about 35 years old, who lived in different places around the world, who arrived about 4 years ago into our community, and he has this incredible passion for growing and cooking. He's a phenomenal cook. He was an executive chef in a number of different various animals raising his two children on this farm way out in the middle of nowhere. And he sources what we call organic and local, and then of course five and a half. And he prepares the food for the three of the meals for that period of time. And I am convinced, there's no doubt in my mind, that that has made a huge impact. Not only by virtue of him being there, of course, but the food itself, the nutrition and food that comes from our animals and our farm, as well as his farm, other local farms and resources. Thank you very much. Thank you for your contribution.